everyone. Welcome to another episode of The Language Lounge. My name is Michelle Ola, and I am so excited to talk to somebody today that I just got the opportunity to meet and talk to. I get my guests sometimes by my own connections, and sometimes somebody just says, "Hey, have you ever heard of John Cowart?" And I say, "Well, no, I haven't. Let me look and let me dig in and see what he does and reach out." And this is how I got to meet you. So, John Cowart, I'm really excited to meet you. I have been geeking out and digging into all of your stuff, all of your blog and your book and all of the things you've been doing. Oh, it's fantastic. Really great stuff. And so I'm really excited to talk with you today and to kind of get started. And we, as often happens with some of my guests, like there's so many things we could talk about, right? There are so many great conversations that we could have. Mm-hmm. And the hardest part of my job is like narrowing it down to like what the focus is. And so when we talked earlier today, we're going to kind of talk about, in general, kind of post-COVID Gen Z students and teachers, and what all this has done, to teaching and learning, I think, is kind of the big conversation we're going to have. And we're going to touch on a lot of interesting things, I think, in the meantime. So John, why don't you just start by introducing yourself? If someone has not, heard of you, what brings you here? What makes you passionate about talking about this? And let's get the conversation started.
Yeah. Well, first of all, thanks for reaching out and inviting me. I'm very excited to jump on and chat with you. So I've been in education. This is year 16. I think what brought me here was when I graduated college, I had learned a lot about comprehensible input and how to teach world languages. I had a professor who was actually teaching courses on total physical response. Like we learned how to do circle questioning. We learned how to do novels. And it was a very progressive and novel program. And so I left there feeling really confident about those things. And I got my very first teaching job at a high school in Memphis, Tennessee. And within a month realized that while I was confident in those things, I had no idea how to be a teacher. Specifically classroom management, organization, system structures, all the stuff that I didn't learn in college, despite having an education degree. And so what I did my first couple of years was I really dove into the world of classroom management. I went to a lot of sessions, read a lot of books. I would take my planning period a couple of days and just go watch some colleagues who were teaching the same kids I was teaching, but not having the same problems. And then my goal really became to sort of marry the two worlds, right? Like this is what we know works with language acquisition, right? Acquisition versus learning, all the Krashen, all the BVP, James Asher, all the theory I learned that I know works. And then like K-12 education, like kids are in front of
right.
You. And how do you join those two worlds? And so I started just building some strategies and just started doing some things over the years, and gradually got better and better and better to the point where I was recording myself, sending it to some of my friends, jumping on Facebook forums and online PLCs and just offering ideas and stealing ideas. That sort of evolved. I got invited to present at a conference for the very first time, which was like my big aha moment. I went to Portland, Oregon in 2017 and I was supposed to present about total physical response because that's sort of like a lost art in our world.
Mm-hmm.
And that I could talk 4 hours about total physical response, but I go, and so my session is I've got 12 or 13 kids in front of high school age kids that I don't know how they got them to come to the summer conference, kids of the presenters, whatever. But I was going to teach them like an hour long lesson. Behind them were like 30 teachers, and they were going to watch. And then afterwards, we were going to talk about TPR. And we start the lesson, and literally 10 or 15 minutes into it, the kids start acting up. I guess they're friends or buddies. They're snickering. They're laughing. They're like, you know, showing stuff on their phone. And in the moment, I had not planned for that, right? I was like, oh, it's going to be chill. It's going to be fun. So I had to start sort of doing some management stuff. So I did like a quick reset. I started doing some positive narration. I did some warm calling. I just did some things to kind of get them back on track. And they did. They were lovely. The lesson finished fine. And then afterwards, I was doing the Q&A with the participants. And the first three questions were about, what did you say to that kid
to get them to put their phone away? That's what they wanted, I bet. That is what they wanted to know, not the techniques you used and all of that, right? That's like, how did you fix that challenge that you had? I love that.
Yeah. So that was my big aha moment, that was a gap in our community. And I started presenting more, sharing more. I actually worked in my own school, took some leadership roles, and then I got recruited to, you know, as happens in our field. I became an administrator, became a instructional coach, assistant principal. I was eventually the director of multilingual education for a large school district out here in Washington. And everywhere I went, every role I had, every teacher I worked with, that was always a starting point, was, do you have some classroom management skills that you can pair with your instructional skills? Because they are joined, right? They're not separate things. And so now that's led me here. Now I'm doing just consulting full time, working with schools, working with departments and teachers. And my number one goal right now is to make sure that any world language teacher who is joining the field as a new one or wants to maybe convert over to the world of, you know, ADI, comprehensible input, the actual best practices, that classroom management is not a barrier to doing that. And I hear that a lot. I see that a lot. I see and hear people say, like, you know, it's so much easier to crack open the textbook and do some OASA almost on. And you know, we feel like we'd accomplished something because we've got all these worksheets. But when they're hesitant to do communicative strategies because of that management piece. And so that is my mission and my drive, is to make sure that everyone has some support, you know, you're not alone. And that I'm offering some strategies to make sure that our field is growing and growing and teachers are doing strategies that work.
I love that. And I think there's so much stuff there that is, you know, my same experience. I think most teachers have those experiences as well. And, you know, you see teachers that have kind of their classroom management, and you think it's their teaching methodologies that are working so well, but underneath that, they couldn't really do those, you know, strategies of, you know, providing that comprehensible input and the questioning and all of that stuff if they don't have that fundamental basis of that classroom community, having those structures in place, that organization in place. And so sometimes I think we think, oh, well, only certain people can do X type of teaching, right? Because they're good at it and they can, you know, they're naturals or something. And we talked a little bit about that, about naturals. So speak a little bit about what we were talking about with natural teachers, that sort of thing.
Yeah. I hope I don't lose friends when I say this, but it drives me crazy when people say, oh, you're a natural born teacher, right? Yeah. Or like you're just born for this work, or it's a calling. First of all, it's a job, right? And we all come to
hard,
a job for
and
a reason. It's hard, right?
Yeah.
We do love the kids. We do, you know, we are a little crazy to want to do this work, but what I try to say is that just like any other job, there are skills that you can learn to improve. There are, you know, your personality, whether you're outgoing, ingoing, introverted, extroverted, whether you are a drama kid like I was, or if you were, you know, being a great teacher and having great classroom management skills is not something that people are born with or not. It's like, because if you think about it that way, then you're like, oh, do I have it or do I not? And you really have that fixed mindset versus I can learn some skills to add to my toolbox every day. It's going to make me better every single day incrementally until I'm rocking and rolling. And that's really the name of the game. There's no magic wand. I don't go into districts and say, you know, by Monday, you're all going to be Dead Poet Society standing on the desk. It's incremental and it can be learned. And that is the number one thing that I want people to take away from any work I do, any speech I do is if you have that mindset and you really believe that, that you can, you control the room, like you, like the teacher controls the weather in the room and students, kids are kids. They will respond to whatever environment you set up for them. And I, that mindset has been challenged. I've been challenged with that mindset in my hardest days, my hardest times, but ultimately everywhere I've been, every school I've worked with, every place I've seen, like that is true. Like teachers who lean into it and believe it and acquire the skills end up having success.
Absolutely. So I think this is going to kind of lead us into kind of a slow lead in, but what we were talking about, I think talking to teachers, we both I know most of my friends are teachers. I mean, the people I contact with, our job, everything, we talk to teachers. And I think post COVID / Gen Z, because they kind of aligned at the same time, I hear more talk about classroom management and motivation in particular, those two things. And it's not always in a positive mindset, right? Like there, I think, and again, collectively, I'm not under, under whatever the trauma that all of that pandemic teaching pandemic did, you know, all of the things that happened in that time period and us still recovering from that, teachers and students in many, many ways. But I do hear like just so much talk about kids these days, motivation, classroom management, challenges, and not just from new teachers, where maybe that's the conversation we used to hear from new teachers. You know, we're hearing them from pretty much every teacher, as far as I know, pretty much every teacher. And so what is your opinion on that? What do you think's going on? What are some of your thoughts as far as that kind of topic and the teachers and the students, you know, teaching and learning in general? The current state of it, I guess.
Yeah. There's this intersection happening, right? Like you said it, like COVID, Gen Z, new generation, every generation brings, you know, different things and challenges. And all the challenges that come with that. The interesting trend that I noticed was, you know, prior to COVID, I think you and I talked about this a couple of days ago. I had always worked in the Title I world, right? I always worked in high poverty schools, high poverty districts. And it was like, you know, the conversations that we had were around exactly what you said, always attacking mindset. You know, when I was an assistant principal during COVID, at a high school in Texas that was 95% Hispanic, Latinx, I think 90% students who qualified for Title I services. So high poverty schools. And for the years leading up to COVID, the conversations were always about, hey, every summer let's check our mindset, right? Like, because these, like, it's hard, right? Like the kids are coming to us and they're bringing challenges. And then we would tackle classroom management. We would tackle things. We understood that if you try to lecture at these kids for 30 minutes, you're going to have a bad time. And so we dove really hard into instruction and what that means for students who have challenges with attention, who are coming to school not whole and not healed, right?
Right.
And the invitations that I would get prior to COVID to come, you know, come work with the school, come work with a teacher or a department. The vast majority of those invitations came from schools like I was working in, right? Memphis City Schools, you know, Oakland, California, just high, you know.
Yeah.
And so you walk in and everyone understands, like, we have to do this. Like, this is not just survival, but we're not going to thrive unless we can get these things right. In the past 2 years, that trend has shifted, and I am getting a lot of requests and invitations from a lot of suburban schools, private schools, religious schools. And what was interesting was, you know, I, um, during COVID, I worked at this high poverty school. We helped the school get through COVID in the year afterwards. And then we moved up to Washington State. I followed my husband who got a job out here and it was fine. But I ended up in this district that is exactly what we're talking about. Historically, had been suburban, affluent, and mostly white students. And there's been a demographic shift. The people don't realize that in the country, there is the whole white flight and back to the suburbs and people fleeing the inner cities, that's shifting. Mm-hmm. And the suburbs are where the highest rate of poverty is increasing in this country, not urban areas, not rural areas. It's actually the suburbs. And so what's happening is we've got these historical districts that have these teaching staffs and schools personnel that have been there forever, and legacy, strong, you know, unions that have these great contracts that, you know, that are set up, you know, for a district that, you know, was serving that population. And now they're serving students who are coming from higher poverty, COVID, Gen Z, the TikTok age. And they are at this, they are at an impasse where what I see happening is you don't have the skills to teach these kids and you need to acquire the skills. They see it as, oh my gosh, what has happened
to these kids,
right? Like, what is in the water? They don't want to be here. They don't want to do this because what worked for you 10 years ago, what worked for you 5 years ago is no longer working.
For whatever reason, really matter, does it? If it doesn't work, we have to shift both those. I love how you have both the mindset and the skills. And I think before when we were talking, you mentioned the will and skills, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that's so interesting that maybe teachers that had a specific set of skills and a specific mindset are now challenged or facing challenges because both that set of skills they had may not be working for the current situation, and they may just not have shifted their mindset to something that works as well. So what do you talk about with these teachers then? What are these? I have a feeling these are some very courageous conversations that need to be had when you're confronted, because I do hear a lot, and I shouldn't say a lot. That's not true. I do hear things like, well, that's great, but I can't do that with my kids. Mm-hmm. I can't, that's not going to work in my classroom because, and then a laundry list of the reasons why, whatever those might be, right? So how do you have these conversations with teachers about both the skill set, but also the mindset? Where do you start? I guess that's my first question. Do you start with the skills or do you start with mindset?
Oh, definitely start with mindset, 100%. And attacking mindset is a lot harder than attacking skill.
I agree.
If it was just show up and like, here's my five-step program.
Right. You can read the book about that, right? But
But you named it, a courageous conversation, right? When I work with a teacher, first of all, I don't want to come across that I have a deficit mindset about teachers. This is 100%. Hard work. And I'm going to go on a mini tangent. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this number's changed, but at one point in the past couple of years, it was like 71% of college professors who are teaching education courses at the university level never taught K-12.
Right.
Right. And you compound that with world language teachers who are like, have college professors who are like, I research and I write books and I have to teach this class on the side. I know nothing about language teaching. Right.
Right.
So I have a lot of
empathy. That is a disconnect there. Absolutely.
Exactly. I have a lot of empathy and a lot of patience with teachers who are struggling, who are frustrated because they want to do good. So I don't want to come across
absolutely.
That way. Absolutely. And so when I'm working with teachers who are struggling with mindset, the tool that I use to attack that mindset depends on them. I talk to them. I listen to them. You know, I ask them lots and lots of questions to get, you know, Albert Einstein said, if you have an hour to think about a problem, I'm taking 55 minutes to think about it and 5 minutes to solve it, right? Or think about solutions. And so I try to get a whole holistic idea of what you're struggling with and what's going on. And then the tools that I have in my belt, one is for them to see that it's possible And so I've got videos of myself teaching of people. If possible, one of the best things for me was I need to go watch a colleague who's teaching the same kids I am and having success with them. Sometimes that's not in your building. Sometimes, like, let's take a day. Let's call someone, you know, let's network and see if we can go watch you teach. I had a mini sabbatical when I had a student teacher for a couple months one year. And I flew across the country and watched Bryce Hedstrom teach. Mm-hmm. He was a Spanish teacher in Colorado before he retired. And was like the best PD that you could ever get. So having them see that this is possible is a great starting point. And then facilitating that reflection, right? Like, there's a great coaching strategy I learned called see it, name it, do it. See it is like, I want you to see the exemplar, right? This is what a great class can look like. Now let's name the gap between what you just saw and what happens in your class. And I'm talking about teacher actions. What does the mm-hmm. teacher say and do, right? That's what we're focusing on. And then how does that compare to you, right? And then we name the gap, right? Like, this is what the teacher did. Oh, they held for 100%, right? They did a countdown and then they started finding the kids who were silent instead of focusing on the kids who were still rowdy and positively acknowledging those kids, maybe even using a token economy, right? If you have to, mm-hmm. right? And they, oh, okay, that worked. And then they gave a direction and then they had a kid say the direction back, right? Like let's spell mm-hmm. it out what they did, right? And then, like, we do it, right? So we name the gap. So now we're going to practice how to do what they just did. And I'm going to teach you how to do it. I'm going to model how to do it. Sometimes I jump in the front of a group of kids I don't even know and I'll model it. And I like it when it doesn't go well. I like it when it, you know what I mean? Because I'm like, yeah, that's real, right? That's authentic. Right. So that's a great starting point is just have them see it, have them break it down, or like facilitate that practice with them. Another thing that I learned is I asked teachers like, tell me your vision for your perfect class. What is your perfect class look like? Let's really spell that out. And like, tell me more until we get a really full picture of it. And then we break it down to say, what's the first step we need to take to start making this happen? And just really facilitate that conversation with them. And then, you know, the other one that's pretty cliche and there's a lot of memes about it, but like, remember your why, right? Like, but, you know, but that, but there's a,
it does
there's a
matter.
Reason why that's,
yeah.
It matters. Yeah. It matters. Because at some point we all decided, you know what, to hell with being rich. I want to go do something that matters. Let's get in the field of education. And it's so easy to forget that. It's so easy to get jaded. I was watching an episode of Modern Family last night, and the plot was that the couple wanted another baby, and they were so gung-ho about it. They were so great about it. And then they start babysitting their like 2-year-old nephew, and he destroys their house. And then they're like, oh, we don't want this anymore. But then at the end of the episode, he's playing cards with their 7-year-old daughter. And they're like, that's why, right? We want to have a sibling. Right. We want to have a family. And so it's like, right. It is cliche, but it is important to stop and find times in your day and week to say, what am I doing this again for? Okay. Because that matters. Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely. And it's tough out there. Like, there's no denying, like, it is just not an easy time out there in teaching and in the world to some extent, right? And so mm-hmm. just that, those positive affirmations. One of the things I really loved, like, I haven't even looked at all of your booklet, but I've been digging in. And one of the things when you talk about mindset, and so I guess I skipped a step. So John, you do have a book on classroom management in the CI classroom, mm-hmm. Really almost any class, any world language classroom for sure. And lots of nuggets for lots of classrooms. But when you talk about mindset, I noticed that there, you had some like very straightforward statements that I'm like, man, I need to like print those out and put them where I can see them every day. And I don't know if you might not have them memorized, but I wrote a couple down, but even just like, I am the cultural leader in my classroom. Students will respond to whatever I do. you know, what I believe about my students will become that truth. That one, like I literally even just, this is the second time today I've read that and I've gotten shivers, right? Because we have to remember those positive things and our positive impact, because otherwise, yeah, it's just too hard, right? And so,
And that's just, research-based, right? Yeah. There's research to back this up, right? Like we know that if we set a, let's just talk about business, right? If we set our financial goal that we want to grow by 30%, right? Mm-hmm. The chances of you getting to 40% are pretty low, right? Because you set that bar at 30. But if you set the bar at 60, and really you want to get the 40, right? Research matches that. So with our mindset, just believing that your kids can do this isn't going to solve all the problems, but it's the prerequisite. Right. To making it happen. You have to believe it because it informs your actions. If a kid puts their head down and you don't think that kid cares or wants to be here, the likelihood you're going to go over and address that is pretty low. But mm-hmm. if you believe, no, I know this kid is struggling. I know they're having some issues at home. I know it's not going to be perfect and they're not going to meet this crazy standard that, you know, maybe the mm-hmm. district wants us, you know, but I know that I can get something out of them today, right? Hey, are you sick? Are you tired? Do you want to get some water and take a break? Like, let's address that, right? Like, because I know that you want to be here and that you can do this. So the likelihood that I'm going to go address that is increased. And so it does matter a lot.
And I think we forget how hard mindsets can be to change. I mean, they mm-hmm. are deep and we don't always even know how deep they are, I think, until we're kind of challenged with something. I find it so interesting. My son is at a school where it's absolutely perfect for him. He's at college and they don't have grades. They have contracts. And so they don't have grades. They get feedback. And I'll tell you, for me, who's always, said and believed with all my heart that learning is what matters, not a grade, I struggle not knowing, like, okay, yeah, but how are you doing? How are you on your contract? Like, what did you get on that last test? And he's like, Mom, it's not how it's done. That's not how this works. I'm like, yeah, I know. Okay. And I love that about that school, but I still have a really hard time letting go of some of my beliefs and my mindsets about what it means to achieve, even, right? And so, like, it's really challenging. What does it mean to look at, you know, whether it's language or learning and whatever it is in a different way. And when I question myself, yeah, I'm like, yes, I do believe this. It is true. And I need to remember, I need to reflect. I need to keep, reminding myself, what is it that's important? One of the funny things is he's taken Latin. He is not a language person, never liked languages, didn't like Spanish. I've talked about that in the show before. And he's in Latin now, Latin 4. He's barely passing any of them. Like he by his own admission says he's terrible at it. He's not good at it, but he loves it. He absolutely loves it. But me reconciled with that's okay. You know, that's okay that he's just getting something out of this experience, even though he's not really going to be proficient in it. He's developing so many other things that are worthwhile by him in this experience. And I think back to my own classroom when I was in the classroom and I think, you know what? Some of those students that may never have, I mean, obviously the goal is for them to be proficient in the language, but sometimes just letting them explore and be successful at the level of success that they want and need is okay, you know? And so I just find it, you know, I think when I stop and think about those mindsets that I have and had, it's sometimes different. My reality is different than the ideal. And so just keeping that why, keeping those thoughts up and at the top of mind, whether it seems weird and hokey and I agree, like it seems like, oh, cliche, but I think it really does, make a difference. And
you bring up a really good point about like bite-sized feedback. That's right. How you get better, right? Like,
right.
One of the things I coach teachers on with like a hard class, right? Like your worst class, right? Oh, okay, we mm-hmm. just wrangle in your worst class. Well, where I start with is your first 5 minutes of class. I'm not dogmatic about a lot of things, but I am dogmatic mm-hmm. that the first 5 minutes of your class needs to be silent, pencil to paper, easy, some type of bell work, some type of like, frankly, like, you know, mm-hmm. it can be vocab copying, whatever. But that is your moment. Where that is the easiest moment that's going to be to manage your classroom, right? The directions are simple. Pencil, paper, you know, copy and paste whatever's on the board, whatever, right? And I'm walking around and I'm giving immediate feedback to the students who are doing exactly what they're supposed to be doing, small adjusting feedback as needed. And that is a great, great strategy to start, you know, to start the journey of getting that class sort of wrangled together. And when I coach teachers, and then when I was like coaching coaches, right, I was coaching, you know, instructional coaches, I am dogmatic that do not overwhelm the teacher with a bunch of feedback, right? You go into a classroom, yes, even if I watch an hour of your classroom, I'm going to talk about one thing. I have a pyramid of skills, right? And I'm looking to see how far up the pyramid I can go. But once I find that one skill, I'm like, okay, if you can master this by the end of the week, you're going to feel it. Like you're going to feel success. And then we're going to go to the next bit. And that is what changes that mindset of yeah, like, oh, like, just trust me. All right. I just want you to trust me. When you count down, I want you to hold for zero. I want you to narrate and don't move on until they're silent.
Yeah.
I promise you they will. I promise you they will. Think about when your worst, rowdiest class is just crazy, crazy, crazy. And then a stranger walks in the door, right? Like, let's say it's like this happened one year. I was like crazy, whatever. And then I guess like the district brought someone in and he's like 7 feet tall. And my kids shut up immediately and stared at him. And I was like, oh, so you can.
You do know what.
You know how to do it. You can do it. But what was it that triggered right, that, right? Like novelty, something. This is interesting. I care about this. I'm curious about this, right? So like, let's tap into that. So when you feel that bite-sized mindset, like those bite-sized wins, that's what will change your mindset, right? Because I'm very clear, it's not going to happen overnight, but you can feel small wins, even if the rest of it is like, okay, we'll get to that. Yeah, we'll get to your guided practice a little bit later. We'll get to your circle question a little bit later. But right now, did you feel that when you gave those directions? They were with you. That was a positive moment. That did not happen last week. And I want to remind you of that. That was not happening last week. That is a huge win, right?
I love that.
And that is what gets teachers really motivated to continue the work.
And I absolutely. And I think the other, so one of the things you mentioned quite often, and I am with you 100%, is that value of coaching and those coaching conversations and feedback. And it makes me very sad and angry sometimes that all teachers don't have that, because really, mm-hmm, I think there's very strong research. Well, there is strong research that, you know, sit and get PDs and these one-off things are not what have teachers grow. And it's these conversations, not the directives, not the, you know, thing, you know, all the top-down things. It's these one-on-one conversations. Mm-hmm. And I've talked to a lot of teachers where I tell them, sometimes you need to be your own coach. And, you know, if you learn about coaching, even if you just use it on yourself, because I think a lot of teachers are very high achievers and we want to go from zero to perfect. I want to be a teacher like this one I just saw. I want to be there, but I don't want to do it like now. I want to be there tomorrow, right? And so we don't often, at least I'll speak for myself, I guess, but I think it's fairly true of quite a few teachers that we also kind of try and go too much and too far too fast, and it gets frustrating because then we see all the deficits instead of our gains, right? And that's what you were talking about with coaching. Like you see that little win and then you want more wins. But if you're aiming, you know, so if you're transitioning to, you know, a comprehensible input sort of classroom, a proficiency focused classroom, from maybe a more traditional legacy approach, you know, if you try and I've had this conversation with many, many people on the show. If you try and change it right away, and some people do, and they're very successful, but it's because they're okay with not being perfect with it right away, right? They're okay with it not, it's going to be messy, and I'm okay with that, right? But I know I wouldn't feel that comfortable being that way. I would have to focus in small sort of, you know, chunks on my own and kind of to do it that way. And it, of course, takes all types, but I think if we could coach ourselves, or if we had that opportunity to kind of reflect and coach, if you don't have a coach and you have the opportunity, mm-hmm, I would think it's one of the most impactful things, you know, as a teacher that you can experience.
I want to quote you on that, like make a poster out of it, right? Like if you have the opportunity to get coached, take it.
Do it,
right?
Yeah.
But again, I get the hesitancy, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. It's not easy.
And you know, education is not helping our teachers, right. the field.
Absolutely.
I got invited to the school district a couple of weeks ago, and the teaching staff is just at their wit's end with, you know, with the behaviors, with everything else. And when I did an audit, like a needs assessment, like let's figure out how this school works and what's going on. I don't mean anything by this, but their principal was a former businessman who wanted to get into education. Their head of schools, their like district leaders are all former like PE teachers. They're all like 7 feet tall. Mm-hmm. They're all men. And they come into the building and the kids are all like, you know, quiet. And then they leave and the teacher's like, no, like that's not helpful, right? Like I don't have anyone in this building to help me. So they're having to go to the outside to find coaches. But if I'm starting a school or building a school, the first thing I'm saying is like, we need instructional coaching and support. Right. That's not evaluative. It can't be evaluative. It has to be just coaching. I am your cheerleader. I am your coach. Just like in sports.
Yeah.
I go on a small little sports tangent, but I'm a big NFL fan, for better or for worse. And I was listening to this podcast about how the past 2 years, every quarterback that was drafted has failed. There's been 20 that were drafted that were high draft picks. And right now only one is going to start this year and he might get fired. Right.
Wow.
And they were trying to break down like, what is going on with quarterbacks, right? Like the league only has like three quarterbacks. That's why the Chiefs and everyone else are always in the Super Bowl. There's only like four people who know how to play the position. Yeah. And what they were talking about was very relatable to this. They were saying, you know, 10 years ago, when you get a rookie quarterback, they don't play for the first year. They probably don't play for the first 2 or 3 years. And they sit behind a veteran and they watch and they learn and they go to practice, and in practice they make a million mistakes and they get, you know, and that this is football culture, right? They get chewed out, they get whatever, but they get coached, right? And that sort of forgiving, and then they get put on the big stage in front of 100,000 people, and the likelihood that they succeed is way, way better. And nowadays that's not happening. Now it's like, coaches get 2 years, and then if you're not good, you get fired. So they're going to put the rookie out there and hope for magic.
Sure.
And it's ruining them, right? It's ruining these players, and it kills their confidence. It kills their mindset. That was another thing that came up, is like the quarterbacks believe that they're not cut out for this league, that they can't succeed in this league. The players are too fast. It's too hard. And so it kills their confidence, despite the fact that they have all the physical skills and the mental IQ to do this. They burn out. And I was like,
wow,
that is so true about teachers.
It is.
I had a student teacher in Memphis. Shout out to Sarah Kirst. She is phenomenal. She's still she's in the classroom. She's rocking and rolling. She's still in Memphis. But she was a 21-year-old college kid, fresh out of college. And she was my student teacher at this high poverty high school. And, but her teaching program was where she was with me an entire school year, not just a couple months, the entire school year. And they said, she's not allowed to get in front of kids for the first like 6 weeks. And then it's a gradual release, right? She's going to lead the do now, right? She might pop in and do a couple of directions. And then by November, she's doing a whole half class. And then she has one, right? And by the end of the year, that's when I went to go watch Bryce Hedstrom, right? Right. I'm gone. Goodbye. Good luck. Mm-hmm. And she ended up, I think, getting like teacher of the year. And now she's a department chair and she is just wonderful. But let me tell you, and she'll be the first to say this, those first couple months were rough. The first time I said, hey, we're going to do a little project. I want you to get up and give the directions, right? Giving directions. I spend 45 minutes on in my course, how to give directions. And she crashed and burned and I had to go rescue her. And her face got really red and she broke down and cried. And we were chatting about it a couple of years ago. Like, hey, remember that time? Because now she's like killing it, right? I went to go watch her teach. I think it was Douglas High School in Memphis. If you Google Douglas High School in Memphis, you'll see all the negative news reports about this high school and all the fights and they have metal detectors. And I walked into the back of her classroom and it was just magic. It was just kids eating out of the palm of her hand. Kids like standing up and saying, yo, quiero, saber, pork. You know, it was just so, it was just magical. And it was because, and she, but she's not a magician. Mm-hmm. And she wasn't born that
way. Born to it. Right. Right.
Right. She just leaned into it. And she said, you know, I want to do this. They can do this. And here's how we're going to do it. But I think about if every teacher had that opportunity to get to, I know everyone does some student teaching, mm-hmm. but are you really right? I feel it's like a little rush. It's a little, anyways. So.
And that it was, does. I love that. I think you're so right. And I love how we just go, see, this is, we're having a totally different conversation than I kind of thought it was going to go. So this is, I love this. This is great. We kind of got on this coaching sort of thing. But I think you're right. Like back to our original sort of, our ideas about, you know, kids now, teaching now, the circumstances now of teaching, everything we've talked about is so related. I mean, it really is because it's that mindset. It's that learning how to maybe do things you haven't had to do before because the kids are different. Learning how to relearn classroom management or learn it maybe for the first time. If you really had easy classes and you had, you know, those kids that always wanted to be there. And sometimes that is, you know, I had a pretty easy experience for many of my years teaching until I didn't. Mm-hmm. And then I had to relearn or learn some different skills, some different things. And I did have to change some mindsets that I had, right? And none of this is to say any of this is easy, right? But I love that you can do it and you can be successful. I do love when I'm looking on Twitter, I'm looking on Facebook, and I still see lots of teachers that are like, I love my job and I love my kids. And yeah, it's not easy, but you know, we do this and we're, you know, I'm making an impact every single day. And so I think sometimes it's just because of the circumstances. It's also hard to remember all of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. As well.
And I was always befuddled at the end of each year. A kid would come up to me that I knew just like hated me and like hated my class. And it was like pain in the butt. Oh, Mr. Cow, do I get to have you next year? You're my favorite teacher.
Yeah.
Really?
Really?
Right? Like, really? Because that's kids, right? They are absorbing everything you're saying, but you're planting seeds, right? And talk about delayed gratification. We're not going to see that for years sometimes. And so you just got to keep reminding yourself like, yes, even though he flipped his desk and told me off, I know that he heard my comment, right? I believe in you. I'm disappointed and I'm excited to have you back tomorrow, right? I wrote his referral to the office, right? So they do absorb those messages. Yeah.
I think so. You also just said something that I think is really, really important and insightful. My classroom management, challenges may not be yours, right? So again, mm-hmm. like I've never had a student necessarily flip a desk and, you know, tell me to whatever, sure. And that is the reality of some teachers, right? And so some teachers' classroom management, you know, skills maybe have to be in a different way, right? And have to, they have to pull some really deep stuff out and others are, you know, that, and all that to say is that whatever circumstance and challenge you're facing, you know, there are ways to kind of help manage it and help learn and to get better. I think we have to believe that, right? That's kind of the first step we have to believe.
Exactly. You bring a good point. One of the things I always say in my course or when I'm working with teachers is everything I teach you is as needed, right? You know, because I taught high school, I've got six classes. Typically two classes are pretty good, right? Like pretty much no matter what I do, they're going to be fine, right? I can fumble through some directions. I can like not be on my P's and Q's and they're going to be fine. And then I got two classes that really need me to be alert, attentive, and on my game. And then I got two classes that are like really responsive to me, right? Like if I call those my barometer classes, right? Like at the end of the day, if it didn't go well, I can identify pretty easily. Yep. I wasn't tightly planned. Whatever. And I tell people, you know, judge yourself on those barometer classes, right?
If you judge yourself on that
and you're right? Your little angel baby classes. Oh, I'm the best teacher in the world every day. Your hard classes. I'm the worst teacher in the world every day. Find those classes that are like, you know what? Because, you know, classes shift, right?
Yeah.
You know, in August, second period was my favorite. And then in spring, they're like my least favorite, right? So judge yourself based on how you're responding to those barometer students and those barometer classes. That is an indication of how well you're working on yourself and reflecting and adding your skills and keeping yourself accountable for those skills.
Yeah, I love that. That is like, seems simple, but so insightful. And I think those classes were always the ones that when I was coaching, I would tell teachers or recommend to teachers as well, like, that's where you can learn. That's where you can try some things out. And it's okay if it's not perfect. You can get some of those skills, to kind of, you won't get a terrible response. You won't get an overly excited response. You'll get a real response where you're going to actually learn something new about yourself and about students. And so I love that. And I bet you, as you say that, I think about those are probably the classes we kind of just take for granted and ignore the most. Mm-hmm. And really, they probably, like, I love that focus of those being the ones where all that growth can happen and where you can really, you know, see the positive sort of things. And I just think that's great. I love that.
It's like a more forgiving, you know, it's like, okay. Yeah. Right? And so, yeah, don't, you know, it's like, it's just like sports. I coached high school sports when I was a teacher, and it's like, you know, I started a soccer team for these kids who never played soccer before. And we just got creamed the first couple games. And then I called up some other like schools that were like ours, like new programs, like, let's go play them. Right. And it just slows down. And like, everyone's kind of like on the same page, making the same mistakes. And that's where we can really reflect on like, how are we transferring our stuff from practice to the game? Because when we played the defending state champs, we got a lot. We're not even close to like work with it, but if we can master the skills in a slower environment and transfer it over, that's what matters.
I love that. Well, I do want to talk about, so we've talked a lot about the mindset and kind of the circumstances and growth and coaching and a lot of those things. And we've mentioned the skills, right? Those skills that we need. And so I know we don't have time in this episode to dig in. You've got a book about classroom management for the CI classroom. You've got a course. Has that come out or is it coming out, the course about it?
So the course is ongoing. So basically it's like month-long cohorts.
Okay. And
we just finished up a February cohort. I'm working with a cohort of teachers for April already, so we're already set up. But I am going to have a general open course for May. And I can share my website with you. It's
we'll put all that information for sure in the show notes as well, so people don't have to, if you're driving, be safe. You don't have to write anything down. So we'll keep all that in there. John Cohort. Consulting, right? Tell me what your actual website is, though.
It's johncowartteaching.com.
Teaching. Perfect. Yeah. That's easy to remember.
Awesome. And just some notes about the course. It's all virtual and it's all designed for working teachers and parents.
Wonderful.
So the live component is really like open Q&A. All the other instructional stuff, like the really heavy brain stuff, is like recorded. Lots of recorded videos, like my PowerPoints, my book. And then we come to the live session to sort of digest it all and ask questions. And it gets really intimate. Like, I get to really learn about where you're teaching and where you're from and hear your specific problems and help sort of tailor ideas towards that. So, yeah, it's been going on for 6 years now, the online course.
Wow, that's fantastic.
I can't believe it.
What are those skills? Is it a 5-step sort of program to learn? I'm trying to remember from what I saw. Maybe that's changed. Or what are the, what are those skills that you, and again, why don't you just give us like a high, you know, high point, a high view of it? And then if teachers want to know more, you know, they can be directed to your course or your book, which I've looked at the book. And one thing I do have to say before we go on, what I really love about you and your blog post and your book, and we've already seen it in the podcast too, and I think this is so valuable, is your way to explain things through stories and through experiences. Mm-hmm. And I think that is so, I really appreciate that about you, John. And I really love that when I'm reading, you know, your blog posts, they're so engaging because you have a way of bringing stories in to really have it hit home. So I do encourage people, from just the little bit I've looked at some of your resources, John, to really dig into that. So But I do want to give you some time to give that high, kind of high view of what are some of those skills that go with the mindsets that may help teachers in this sort of new environment with students that it may be maybe new to them environment.
Yeah. So the zoomed out scope and sequence of the course, we start with routines and procedures, like 101. Like, what are, like, I wasn't a big routine and procedure guy, but there are some that I'm like, you have to have this. You have to have a routine to enter class. You have to have an end of class routine. You have to have routines for, you know, all the other papers, whatever. So we dive into that quite a bit. And then we spend a lot of time on the five-step behavior management cycle, which is not an original thing of mine. It's I learned it from a workshop from a guy. So I go over all the – I cite all my sources. Uh-huh. But the five-step program is how to give directions. Like I mentioned, that's like a whole hour, right? Mm-hmm. Like how to give directions. And then how to expand your radar and scan the room. So we go over some strategies about where to stand. How to move, right? Like some counterintuitive things. Like if a kid raises their hand and they want the floor, call on them, but then walk away from them and look at everyone else except for that kid, right? Like little things like that. Like, okay, like
sure.
Otherwise, yeah, I could go on so many tangents.
And trust me, I would love you to, but you know, I can't keep you here all day. So,
And then, so the classroom management, so direction, scanning, positive narration, redirections, and then consequences. We do talk about consequences. I am not in this, like, I'm not some hippy dippy, like, oh no.
Right.
No, kids need to be held accountable. And I talk about how to do that effectively. And then we get into some more CI specific management things. So how to manage whole group conversations. I talk about my hand signals. I talk about lesson planning, how I chunk all my lessons into like 7-minute bits. So I'm not standing in front of kids for 30 minutes trying to keep their attention with a TPRS story, like how to chunk that up. I talk about how to bring in like K-12 strategies, like how to, you know, ground your class in an exit ticket, how to use data, how to, I'm not a big data guy, but when in classroom, in language acquisition, but how to do those things. How to question, right? We know circle questioning, but how do we do it in a way that matches kids who have, you know, TikTok on their phone and all these, you know, other challenges? So we get specifically about when to do whole group questioning and when to do individual, how to cold call, how to warm call, how to assign the question you're gonna ask to specific students strategically, right? To keep everyone with you on board and feeling successful. So we talk about all, but then we talk about, you know, bathroom policy, right? We talk about cell phone policy, like ideas on how to limit cell phones. So we talk about all the other
practical
stuff
as well. It's not all just theory and methods. It's also, which I love, it's also down into the, it's a problem.
Yeah.
You know, how do you conduct a class when, like, people are constantly leaving and yet you have to respect this? And, you know, like there's a lot of things that aren't always accounted for. And so I love that you get down into some of those, you know, real questions and real challenges
very
that teachers face, right? Yeah.
Very practical. I think I talk about theory for like 20 minutes and then the rest, because you need to know my philosophy, right? My philosophy about classroom management matters before we get into the nitty-gritty, but then the nitty-gritty is the bulk of it.
I love that. I think that's great. Well, is there anything before we kind of log off? And I am going to give one more plug for one of a specific blog post that you wrote that I just think is so just brilliant. But before I do that, is there anything else that we haven't talked about or any final sort of, you know, wisdom or something that you would like to share with teachers of what you really want teachers that are out there, you know, fighting the good fight and doing good work every day and still may have challenges and get frustrated. It's not either or, right? And have challenging times and maybe challenging mindsets or need certain skills. What do you want them to come away from this conversation with?
I would say, first, all the things you're feeling should be validated, right? Like you're not crazy, right? Like don't let these kids gaslight you. You are not crazy. But secondly, you're also not alone. And I worry that, especially in world language teachers, we live in sort of silos sometimes. I'm the only Spanish teacher at my school. And so we sort of think like we're crazy and that like maybe this CI communicant stuff doesn't work. But third and most importantly is like I got to reiterate, these are things that you can learn how to do. There's no one I've met who can't do these things unless they just simply don't want to. But the vast majority of teachers I met really want to do this and really want to be successful. And I'm here to tell you that these are things that are skills that you can learn.
I think that's a great way to end. And I know as an AP and as a coach and like I've been in a lot of classrooms as well, there's all sorts of teachers. You don't have to be one sort of teacher, right? Mm-hmm. You can be, like you said, an introvert or an extrovert or a storyteller or just, you know, very personal and sharing your experiences, and you can all be effective and you can all, you know, be effective in your own way. And I really think that's something important and lovely to hear. I will say that I, as a last thing, your blog post from last January called What Students Saw About the Dogs, I just thought that was one of the best written blog posts I have ever come across. So creative and making so many interesting connections about presence in particular. And I just want to recommend anybody out there that you really need to go read this. I think it's just brilliant. I really appreciated your storytelling and your crafting of something. I think sometimes there's not a lot of new things out there. Like sometimes we see a lot of blogs or PD or whatever on the same sort of thing. And so this one truly was something where I went, wow, like I've never thought of this. I've never connected these dots. And I just think it's really, really great. So I just wanted to put that out there. We'll put that in the chat as well. And just a recommendation to watch that or to read that. John, what is your, besides your website, are you able to interact with people on X or any of those platforms? Why don't you give us those deets as well?
Yeah. So I'm very active on all the Facebook groups. So the IFLT ADI Facebook groups, there's a lot of them out there, and I will go on and add ideas, thoughts. Every time I do a blog post, I always share it on those groups there. Feel free to reach out to me. You can message me. I think my email is also on my website. They email me randomly about problems, and I respond. This is what I love doing. I said, you know, I believe so deeply in comprehensible input strategies, and if classroom management is a barrier that is preventing you from doing it, please reach out to me. Because I care about this work and I care about our field, and I don't want people to be driven away. So I'm very open and love interacting with folks.
Fantastic. Well, it has been wonderful interacting with you, John, today. And it really has. We're doing this on a Saturday morning, and it's set my day in such a positive tone and direction just because I've learned so much from you just in the short time. And it's been just a pleasure. So thank you so much for coming on the show and speaking with me.
Likewise. Thank you for having me.